Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination.
Good morning. This is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thank you so much for listening to the show as we celebrate all things creating and stories. So let's get ready to tune our imaginations together. I was thinking about stories this week, and one of the things I like to do when I give gifts is to tell the story of why I picked this. And I like to hear the story of why somebody selected that for me. Because I really think that stories matter. And I think stories are where our center of power is. So I'm wondering, what are you doing with your story powers? And I absolutely just love stories. If anybody knows me, you know that. And I adore the idea of sharing stories. And I sometimes think about the fact that that is actually all we have that matters, our stories. And I've wondered this week if maybe that's our job on this planet, is to remember our stories, shape our stories, and tell our stories. Because that's how we process our lives, through our stories. We carry them through us, throughout our lives. And our stories live on through the retelling of the ways that these family treasures remind people of loved ones and their big and little moments. How we experience the world, understand our adventures and moments, shape our retelling of the events in our life, and leave our stories behind. It's the sum of us. And I believe that the stories need us and we need stories, because creating connections is essential to life. These stories can be real or imagined. I can't imagine a world without adventure tales, romance, family lore, life moments, funny happenings, inspirational miracles, failed moments, joys, shared troubles, triumphs, and all of human experience. We are the translators of these experiences. We are the story keepers, and we are the storytellers. What are you doing with your story powers? It is a blessed place, and that is where we are now, here in Northfield, on Division Street, in the KYMN studios. It is a place that is blessed, that inspires people to tell their tales, and values the story makers. And I know that this town is full of fascinating and fabulous people, and doing Art Zany Radio allows me to share these stories with you, and share these stories of the people that live here and visit here. So I'm thrilled today to be able to share with you the story of a fascinating storyteller that I met. And before we start, I want to give a special shout out to the fabulous Kay for introducing us at an art event. So today in the Art Zany Radio studio, I welcome artist Cecilia Condit. Welcome to Art Zany Radio.
Thank you, Paula.
It's a pleasure to have you here. She is, as I mentioned, a storyteller, a filmmaker, a photographer, an installation artist, and a lyricist. She works within the psychological landscape of contemporary fairy tales, dreams, and poetry. And I love that combination. We'll definitely talk about that. She's a professor emerita in the Department of Film, Video, Animation, and New Genres at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, where she was a director of the graduate program in film for 30 years. Wow, that's a long time.
It was.
And her most recent work is called A Parable of Now. It's a vertical three-channel video installation, a visual poem that explores environmental change. Her website is Cecilia, C-E-C-E-L-I-A, Condit, C-O-N-D-I-T.com. So you can check out some more. She's got videos there that I highly encourage you to take a peek at. It's an amazing stuff. She's created videos that have heroines whose lives swing between beauty and the grotesque, innocence and cruelty, youth and fragility. Her work puts a subversive spin on the traditional mythology of women in film and the psychology of sexuality and violence. Exploring the dark side of female subjectivity, her feminist fairy tales focus on friendship, age, and the natural world. She's shown in so many festivals, museums, alternative spaces, and has a lot of representations in many museums. I'm going to let you read that on the website, because I want to get talking today and make sure we don't miss anything. Let's start by maybe just having you tell us a little bit about yourself and your interest in film and how that began. Why was film one of the mediums that you wanted to explore?
I wasn't sure in the beginning that that was what I was going to do. My parents were both artists, painters, and I knew I was going to say something either in writing or something. And I was pretty good at everything, mm-hmm. but I was never brilliant at anything. I was pretty good at music. I was pretty good at writing. I was pretty good at drawing and painting. But I felt like I didn't have a medium that I could connect to where I could tell a story. And the writings that I did were more like about other people's writings. Do you know what you would do when you were in high school? You don't just get asked to do an autobiography at your young age, though I would have had a lot to say if asked. But I started in sculpture and then photography. And I went to graduate school at Temple University, and I found out that I couldn't tell the stories I needed to tell in photography. So they had just gotten some reel-to-reel 3/4-inch decks, all analog, of course, because it was way back. And I started doing some editing with these portable camcorders, which were hardly portable. And so I would take them into the woods and I would film with different people. And that's how I started realizing that I could tell stories. And once I knew I was a storyteller, I became engrossed in the stories that I needed to tell, because I found that my life had had a lot of complications and I had worn a lot of hats as a very young person. So when I started thinking about what stories that I could really tell that would be as deep as I go or that might change my life, because I realized also very young that I was a little bit emotionally unstable. And so I figured as an artist, it was a lovely experience to be an artist where nobody necessarily expected you as a young person to be very stable. And so I felt a freedom to say or talk about anything I wanted to talk about, because if they met me, they might not know right away, but they would know. And I thought that one of the things when I started teaching, that I could be hired as an artist, and I could be a little wacky because I was an artist. And so it gave me license when I could not work 5 days a week, when I could not pull the kind of hours that other people could pull, mostly because I was epileptic, but emotionally I could not do it. So teaching for me back then was 3 days a week and two or three classes. So I really was very lucky to have found a field that I could work in and not put that hat on, such a heavy hat on my head at a time when I wasn't so together. But my 20s were really, there were stories that happened in my life that were so profound. I felt that I was living in a war zone and that I had things that were, I didn't know whether violence was attracting me or if it was out there, and everyone was. In Philadelphia, Rizzo was mayor, and he had been a head of the police force, and he was a very difficult person to have as mayor when you were a woman, if you had friends that were raped or you got attacked, or there was a nonchalance. I remember one time attacked with a knife at a subway station in Philadelphia, and I called the police to come take care of me, and they said, "Lady, you're the third person there today, and just get off my back."
Oh my gosh, what a reaction. That would have shaped you for a long time, because that is something that, you know, changed your world, I'm sure. And here to get that response when you were hoping for help, you didn't get that.
I didn't get it. And I found that there was, at that time, I started finding friends. Do you know, like, you have friends, you grow up into the world and your friends expand. And I found that the people that I became friends with all had stories that were every bit as outrageous as mine. And then I started feeling like, well, this is the world that we live in. This is the sea that we young women swim in. That this is a story that I can tell I wasn't being political because I didn't have that perspective of politics. I just knew that I could tell small stories, very small stories that had were things that I could in some way lose myself in and that would take me to a different place and maybe make me figure out what had happened mm-hmm. and how I could be in that position and why me and then why my friends and then why my sisters. Why? And how did that all come about? So there, I started telling different stories. There was one very violent story that I was involved in, and the first piece I did was Beneath the Skin, and I just told it fact. And I just said it, and then I put all these strange effects on it because video was analog then, and it was very, I made it colorful. It was very colorful.
What year was that again? Because that was back when in the 80s, correct?
That was 81.
Yeah.
And then I did what was the one piece that is the most popular piece online that I've ever done, which is possibly in Michigan. And that I did in response to all of my 20s and when I was 19, when a friend of mine had an abortion that was illegal and she almost died. And I was there with her to try to make sure she was alive. And, you know, I gave myself only 4 times to talk about the blood because I knew that I couldn't do that to people. So I've often thought that even though my work tells a story about early work, talks a story about violence against women, that it was a story that I had to be very delicate with because people couldn't watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of was funny at the same time back then so that I wouldn't be so heavy. And I have this one piece, possibly in Michigan, which is this one that's online, which is, I think it has almost 13 million views.
Wow.
It doesn't mean that 13 million people have looked at it from beginning to end. It means that 13 million people have hit on it. Oh, and there's like people who do repeats, you know, like there's, I can always tell because I know the analytics that most people don't look at it for more than 3 minutes, which means that they get to the point that they know it's about cannibalism. This man who's a cannibal who wants to eat these women, and then the women, he follows them home, and there they kill him and they eat him.
But it's not like a horror movie at all.
No, it's kind of funny.
It's an odd, yeah, it harkens back to those old fairy tales, I think.
It is a fairy tale.
Yes.
It's a feminist fairy tale, which I didn't know it was feminist. I thought I was just talking about the way things were and that me and my friends had so much to be angry about. But there was 2 girls and they were friends. And friends have always been like life and death for me. And in that piece, even though it's about violence against women, it's also about the beginning of themes that I have that are people are friends.
Mm.
And it seems to me that even back then, the friends that I had, virtually nobody has had an easy life. I mean, I have a couple of friends that have had an easy life, but most of my friends have stories. And if they haven't, they either think I'm too weird or I think I can't talk about who I have been. Not that I'm at all unstable. I am totally the most normal mother and grandmother that a person ever had.
But we all have these elements of stories that shape us and affect us. And I'm curious when you figured out that the story had power, when you put it together in an artistic way, that it got power and it connected with people. When did that happen?
That happened as soon as I started telling stories.
Mm.
So when I did photography, it wasn't a story. It was like an image of something, but I couldn't, even I could put shots in the piece. I did life-size cutouts of things. And one of my earliest installations is where I did these huge penis trees. And they were just trunks of trees and they looked like Walt Disney things. You would not necessarily know what they were. At least my mother didn't know what they were when they were screened. And the funniest thing, it was the only things that sold in the show. thought to have. Who would do that and take my strange dream or fantasy and put them in their living room? What could they possibly think?
That's a good question.
But I realized that at the same time that where I had the show, women started picketing. That was right away, as soon as I started doing these life-size cutouts. They didn't understand.
What decade was that?
This was in the 70s.
Okay.
That they did not know, early 70s. They did not know that what I was really talking about, this is how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and so they had, you know, for me, it was all a personal story. But when I started telling video, you couldn't mistake it that this was... Because it was a time,
mm-hmm.
right? And the feminism became, when the first person who wrote all my work, oh, I should tell you about, like, stories, you know, like, about when did I know that the story was something? It was right away. But it also became clear to me, first of all, I started getting a National Endowment for the Art grants instantly. And in the 80s, women were, like, the top of the art kingdom. People were trying to get women artists into a world where, because they weren't. There was maybe Georgia O'Keeffe, but you know, really quite honestly, and there was many others, but women were, young women in particular, were being brought to the forefront.
That's a really particularly important context. I don't think people always remember that it wasn't always equal, that there wasn't, the art world wasn't necessarily a world for everybody.
Oh, it was hostile.
Mm.
It was hostile, but in the 80s, just when I came into feminist work particularly, which there was a traveling shows that were put on by a couple of different museums, one the New Museum in New York and one was the Massachusetts Institute of Art, and they traveled all over the country and they were feminist. And so 200 colleges saw possibly in Michigan and Beneath the Skin, the first two videos. And that was really something. And then Pat Robertson, if I didn't think that that was enough exposure, he put it on his Christian Broadcast Network as I was a man-hater, anti-family, and gay. And I had a husband, and I had a son, and I didn't see it, but I do know I almost lost my job at the Cleveland Institute of Art because the board of directors was most disgruntled with me. And John Glenn, who was in the Senate, John Glenn, who walked on the moon, right?
Yes.
He called the school and wanted to know who this crazy woman is. So it was not an easy ride. Possibly has been really something always.
That's fascinating and something that I don't think, and I'm glad maybe that young artists don't have to necessarily think about, but maybe they do. Maybe there's more of that out there than we know. But that idea of the resistance to expression and storytelling, especially, you know, to have a female-centered story and to see it as something to quiet or, you know, turn away, which it leads me to talk a little bit about the way that you've seen filmmaking over the years, because you spent those 30 years teaching. And I would imagine that the techniques and the exposure to filmmaking and the methods of storytelling that your first students had versus, you know, at the end, you know, that so much of that changed in those three decades. And I would be curious to know how that helped shape your students or what you felt like students came to the program when they started with you in learning how to make films.
Well, it's kind of a funny evolution that I really haven't thought too much about, but I do know that students change. And first of all, there were more women in going to a graduate program, which I was in charge of later on. And before, there were more men. But the women that I had in the beginning were all feminist, much more feminist than me. I was always talking about my world, and they were talking about something else. But a friend of mine who was a graduate student, who as soon as she graduated did a piece called Light My Fire, which was about women's first masturbatory things, which I would have never done because I'm too much of a lady. But she wasn't, and it went everywhere because these were subjects that nobody would have talked about. And now, as a person who looks back, I'm in all these DIY, like do-it-yourself kind of small organizations to curate things often, And I love them because I'm always put with people, women, who are talking about things that are really specially about women, which don't necessarily get shown at MoMA. You know, like it's a political thing, which right now is kind of doesn't have quite the voice. It isn't the time, but there's all these Final Girl, like every year I have been in Berlin and in the Final Girls have shows, which is the Final Girl. And this year they featured my work, which was something, because every year I'd have shown possibly in Michigan in their programs, which is with lots of women who talk about things that are rather unique to women. And possibly this year and also all my other work got a shout out.
Well, congratulations. That's a big deal.
And yet it is a very small organization run probably from grassroots and fundraised it for. Mm-hmm. So there's many things like that that I know that one doesn't know they exist because they're not mainstream. They seem to be, and they're not in places that are like women's places necessarily. Finals Girl is Berlin is, but there's a show I'm having coming up in Ireland, Dublin.
Mm.
And it's not a woman's organization again. They're just having men or women in, and they do Zooms with them, and there's an audience. And usually there's about 30 people, and then there's a Zoom with an artist who could live in India.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. And so they're going to, I'm going to show there in December or January. But I have so many fans that they're going to, instead of the 30-seat hall they use, they're looking for a larger one.
That's exciting. And so your work, so that's really interesting that the work from early in your career is still being viewed and received and analyzed and connected. People connect with it. And some of that reminds me of, you know, the idea of, you mentioned you weren't sure that these were fairy tales, but that's like a fairy tale that has this, you know, well, let's talk about the essence of what makes a fairy tale, or what you've learned about fairy tales. I find it fascinating. I went searching for a definition because I was struggling. I was like, what actually is one? And this is going to be an odd one that I found. So we can start with that. This was from Iowa PBS, Public Broadcasting, and it was Young Explorers with Abby Brown. She's just a voice of their radio or of their television programming that introduces kids to different topics. And it was really interesting what she said. She said, "A fairy tale is a story with characters and settings existing only in our wildest imaginations. It has fantastic creatures, extravagant settings, and it takes place long ago, far away." And I thought, well, that's actually pretty good. And the dictionary actually had definitions that was a children's story about magical and imaginary beings. And that sounded right. But very interestingly, it also said that it was sometimes the word fairy tale means it resembles fairy tale, that it's idealized like a fairy tale romance. And then the third definition said it was a fabricated story, especially one intended to deceive. And that's where it made me just really, my brain was just going crazy thinking about that. So I'd love to hear your perspective.
I like that business of deceiving.
I thought that wasn't something I hadn't thought of, because for me, fairy tales are always, you know, just this happy place. But there's a dark side. Yes,
and,
of course.
And it seems like the fairy tales that people take and go with are, you know, like the Disney, of course, he has like Fantasia, which is very, very dark in terms of like this mouse who is really a man who's decides to take on his not listen to what makes society tick, and he gets carried away, and he's like Isis who goes to the moon or goes to the sun and gets burned. Is that my Isis? I don't know who it was.
Sorry.
I have a mic that's being put in my face.
I just wanted to get a little closer so we can hear you.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm not so interested in the Prince Charming.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that. First of all, I don't. What is the song in Wicked that says he could be that boy, but I'm not that girl? And that song just for me is so brilliant. I have listened to it already so many times. And I just feel like I am simply not that girl. I have too much to say that has to do with women. And I think my work, because I've been known as a feminist person, I've actually sort of grown into the label that I'm given. And I can't make art without knowing that this is a feminist world that I'm talking about. And I'm not talking about it politically. I'm talking about the little fairy tales that make up life. Mm-hmm. Like I have a little girl who remembering my own lines. She just goes out into the world and she finds a rat that's dead. A friend.
This is called The Little Girl.
This is called All About a Girl.
Yes, that's
and
right.
So she goes outside and she, sometimes your worst fears become your best friends. I think a line like that that it is. And she goes outside and she dresses in this really beautiful, she dresses her rat and friend in a really beautiful little dress. And she's wearing a really beautiful little dress. It's all delicate and rosy. And yet she's playing with a dead rat and she says, I'm afraid to be me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big line, and that's been who I have been all my life. I've been so afraid of my own power and my own strength that I've sort of been subversive with me, except for subversive. But I sort of like put it because I've been such a mother. Do you know, I taught all these nurturing things that I think women are different than men. I mean, there's so many, both my sons are so nurturing and they're both such feminists, but I know that I can, what was I talking about? I went to family, which put me into mother mode. I have this strange ability to be afraid of being me. I have a song in this piece I did, I've Been Afraid, where everything I've been afraid of, and it says, I've been afraid of being me. It's a song. I sing it with autotune. I can't sing, so I have to do autotune. But it's everything because I did the whole thing in Instagram on my cell phone. So it made the whole, I think it's like a 9-minute piece or 8-minute piece, and I did every single shot on my cell phone and then just edited it together with words that I made up, and I had a friend put it to music because that's how I work. I don't always do songs, but I often do songs.
Yeah, that's a fascinating part. I want to talk about that, but I first want to remind our listeners we're here today in the Arts Annie Radio Studio with Cecilia Condit. She is, as I said, a filmmaker, a storyteller, a photographer, an installation artist, and a lyricist, and just an incredible artist who has relocated to Northfield.
Yes.
And so we're blessed to have you in this community. We have some great artists in this community, but I'm curious what it was that attracted you to Northfield and how it has influenced some of the art projects that you've been pursuing.
Oh, well, I came here because my sons live in Minnesota.
Oh, that's a good. And that's the connection then.
That's how. And one of them works here in Northfield, so I got a place here. I was in New York when he was in New York. And I sort of took care of their baby. And being in New York gave me another experience of what it was like to be an artist, because I was never an artist that needed a gallery, cared about galleries, never saw any reason for them. And when I went to New York to babysit for his children, I became kind of interested in trying my hand at it, just to see what it could be like. And that changed my worldview because I could realize how difficult it is to be having to sell work. And because me, as soon as I put it online, I don't have to sell it anymore. It's not that I don't sell it. Like the Walker owns a couple pieces of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all the best museums, that's not quite true, but lots.
Yes.
Or at least a number. And I'm not quite sure what to make of, but I know that it's real and it has affected my mind. And I have a show coming up at Microscope Gallery in New York, I think next fall. And that's something that's new for me. I have never been at what would be sort of considered an art, but also commercial gallery before. And I...
This is the photography that'll be on display.
This will be this video, this new piece I have, which is called the three-channel piece, which is vertical stacked.
Oh, yes.
And it's about the environment. The environment and the world has become bigger and bigger. So my story started with all these little horrors that I have gone through. And then I finally, after making all these little horror stories, you know, about childhood and young women and just like, just... having so many things to talk about. And I did a piece about an abortion because my friend had an abortion, and I thought that people should know what it would be like just in case. I did it a few years ago in 19, what it would be like if there wasn't anything like Planned Parenthood, right? So I didn't want to make that piece, and I was surprised at what it stirred up in me and how pivotal I realized it was. Mm. And my friend who had the abortion, who I just came home, she was my roommate, And she told me that she had taken a pill. A doctor had given her a pill. Yeah, it was a real... So I had all these stories that I had to tell, but that one I felt like I should tell. That was like, to the world should know. She didn't die, but it was so terrible that she doesn't remember anything. So I am the keeper of that story.
Right.
Because I'm the only one that remembers it.
And you did that in 2019, which is really, I mean... just the profoundness of watching that with what's going on in our world now.
I know.
Is kind of, it's worth watching because it's an important piece that tells a real story, but also the power of that and the...
It's a fairy tale in that all the men in the piece, except for one guy who was really kind of a rascal, he picked that friend of mine up and took her to the hospital as opposed to saying, call me in the morning. And I say, well, I don't know if she's going to live that long. And they would hang up one after another. And also knowing that her parents would not necessarily have come and helped her, even if I had called them, because she had had an abortion. Mm. And this is their daughter. I didn't even say it in the piece because
no.
I couldn't stand up in front of that, which I have done a lot of times, and say that. Right, because it's too painful to imagine such a thing, but it was true. So I don't always tell the worst. I really do not tell the worst of things that happen, even when I talk about horror. And I'm kind of known. People have been writing about me recently, and they've been saying I was the first. I'm the mother of short horror.
I thought that
was nice.
Mm-hmm.
But 19, I went back to a horror, but I don't do it in the same way I used to do it. I was telling a story because I had told that story only to myself a million times, because you don't tell stories about abortions that you were involved with, even just keeping her alive, because you could still go to jail for aiding an abortion. So I couldn't tell a soul. So it got buried so deep in me that when I told it, just like it all came up. And then my friend who told her story, she asked me afterwards, because she almost died. I mean, she had 15 minutes before she would have been dead. And she said, what happened to me afterwards? And I said, you stayed with me for 6 months. She said, oh, I didn't know that. And she's a perfectly reasonable, talented artist who's in the work. Whose work is in the work. Mm. But she couldn't even remember that. It was too hard. Simple things, which I didn't put in, but it...
It's in there, even though it's unsaid,
It's in there, and it's showing next week in a festival, a women's festival. No, excuse me, another DIY festival of 10 pieces by women about women. And so We Were Hardly More Than Children is in that festival coming up in Brooklyn.
Congratulations again. That's an interesting dynamic to your work, that it's getting exposure and an audience and a following, even though some of it's been yours, but the trajectory of your work is really connected with the younger generation.
It really has. The other day I was looking, it used to be, I thought that it was mostly 13 to 18 year olds that liked it, mostly.
Mm.
And then I never really went through the analytics in YouTube. Oh, TikTok picked it up. And no, excuse me. There's some things that were huge that made possibly in Michigan what it did. And it affected all my work after that. But other work, all my other work gets shown a lot. But they don't have millions of views. They have thousands of views or several hundred thousand views, but possibly has millions and millions of views. And that's a very different level. So that has been something that I used to resent. And now I go like, no, it seems to help people. Mm. I mean, I had such a hard time trying to figure out how to be a girl, especially with a twin brother, how to be a woman. Like, why was I treated differently back in those days when, feminism was so new that I didn't know I was saying it. It was so new for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it got on the front page of Reddit, which is this magazine, international magazine. But it's something to make the front page of Reddit as an excerpt, possibly in Michigan. It's the strangest, creepiest story that they've ever seen, film they've ever seen. And so that, and then people saw it on TikTok, when TikTok came out. And this one woman who acted out this one line, she put her poodle one time in a microwave oven to dry it. No, to eat it. But it exploded and they were both found dead. Oh, she must have been out of her head. And she did that 15-second or 20-second thing, and she had so many followers that she had some of the top TikTok artists in the world as her followers, and so they all saw it. So it was like an overnight explosion. Now it just goes around the internet as a YouTube. It gets in people's feeds and young people's feeds. But now mostly it starts, the biggest number is between 18 and 24, 25, and then it goes from 25 to 35, and that's the biggest. And then 45 to 55 and 13 to 18 are equal. And there's virtually none my age. And I do things about aging, but they're not on YouTube.
That's right. Or are they looking for short films, right?
They're not looking for short. And the biggest thing is that YouTube does not recommend it in their film, in their feed. Like when Bernie Sanders was running for president, my work was up there every single time in the feed on the right. It was so nice.
What a strange world we live in.
What a strange world. It's a world, but yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and so you're getting exposure and these stories are being told and you are working. And I thought one thing that's really interesting that caught my attention was in your biography, you have a little bit about how you moved from some of these feminist stories to the environmental stories.
Yeah, I did.
And the word that just like popped from the page for me was the word frailty. And I thought that was such an interesting word to look at in terms of your feminist work, but the environment and I just feel like there's some connection, that there is an interconnection between those elements. You know, oftentimes women are portrayed in fairy tales as, you know, the damsel in distress or the, you know, someone who needs help or only a man can solve it.
Yeah, I never give that man the responsibility.
No, but
fairy tales do.
Yes, and
they're not contemporary.
Correct.
That's the big thing.
Then that's what you do.
And that's what I do.
And you turn them, right?
I do a twist.
Exactly. And so I think that's interesting that led you to environmental things. Do you see a connection?
Oh, I so do. I don't know if anyone else would see it, but I do know that I do it. I can feel it. When I started, I wasn't so very solid when I was young and doing these violent horror stories. Hardcore, trauma core, drama core. That's what the term is online, right? But I have been a mother, 3 meals a day, I felt was very good for me. And then I became writing things that had more to do with my life or friends losing their memory or not remembering me.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly having friends disappear but still be there, and them trying to put, I have a doll, this one friend of mine who has been losing her mind, putting this piece together, a leg and an arm and a head, and it's sort of strangely creepy, but she has dementia. So she has, you know, she's just playing with her life and trying to remember. And I have a line that if I had only one memory, I would like it to be a happy one. And that for me was the premise of the piece. But so my world is different. My friends do different things and they go through things. And there's certainly nothing wrong with my mind yet. But, you know, and I'm not dead yet. But there are different challenges. I feel like the woods and the environment, for me, I can identify with. I think of the woods as something that is feminine. So when I walk in the Arboretum, for me, I'm taking a psychological bath in a woman's world. Mm-hmm. I don't think of the earth as masculine. Maybe it's because it's always been gendered, which has been very bad for the earth, because I feel like women and the earth have had a very rough ride. Mm-hmm. And we have both been put down in so many ways and not thought of as though we were somehow apart from the storytelling of the male world. The history we learn from are all the wars. They're all the people who, there's Napoleon, there's George Washington. Look at the founders. It isn't, there's always been little landmarks of what women did, and you have to dig for them. I have a family tree that I look at, and I can hardly find one woman who hasn't. And again, we weren't able to, and it wasn't just that we weren't able to. The laws of the land made it impossible. I mean, there was one thing I saw on Instagram recently where it said a woman was asking her husband, when was the first time when a woman wanted to start a business that she could get a loan? And he was saying, same time, 2019, 2020. And finally he went up to, 2088 or something? No, 1988. And that was the first time a woman could do, and even her son, even her baby boy could get that loan, but she was not allowed to. So we have really had a certain something that we've been up against. But the environment, to me, just seems to be very pressing right now. And because I have healed myself in so many ways by going through all this life that I've had, and I find that I'm extremely healthy and extremely happy, and yet the world is in the environmentally is it has to have a person telling stories. And it's like not like me, I'm just a small fry. I mean, it's not like Bjork, who has this big thing in Paris right now, dealing with this story of the earth and its being brutalized, and the value of animals in this earth. And the lack of, with AI, I have another piece called AI and I, where I'm talking about my body and also its body, which is not a body in my mind, because I feel like I live my life in this woman's body. And I've given birth, which is definitely connects me to the animal world, or the not just the human world, but the animal world, because it is such an animalistic thing that we all have in common. We also, our children die. They die in childbirth. We die in childbirth. We don't die at war, but we definitely, now we do. Mm-hmm. But now it doesn't seem that it matters very much if we should be 5 feet tall, because all we have to do is be in front of a mic or like this, or we can be in front of a computer. One does not have to be brilliant at war to be a highly successful woman. And so now, of course, what's happened is the backlash. I mean, people know this. You cannot be blind enough to know that women have, compared to when I was young, had, you know, like abortion was something that didn't necessarily kill you, but it did kill you. And everybody knew people who were killed having them. And in Philadelphia, and where I was, which is my small world back then. And so I started realizing that I identified with more with that the feminine world mm-hmm. that had also had a problem, and that the politics of the time seems to be creeping in. So this new piece, A Parable of Now, which is right now, I have these two girls, and they are just beautiful. They're well fed. There's nothing wrong with them. And then things, I have this water, so much of it is shot underwater, and it becomes a sort of an allegory for this anger that builds in them and the dangers they face. And finally, they start screaming. It's a strange, it isn't as much of a story as my others, but it is definitely, you have no doubt that I am talking about a world that even the natural world would be angry. But they are angry at the future that we have left them. And I have all women in it, which is what I do, unless I want need a murderer or somebody creepy, and then I put a man in it. But these are all women that are in it, and they float around. Some of it's me always because I'm cheap and available. And that is, in the end, I have these puppets that are just stick legs with little baby feet because, you know, I have a little grandson. And it just walks, but this time it walks not like trying to stay above the waves or not drown. It sticks, walks down an abandoned street. And it's and there's all these bird cries, extinct birds. People don't know they're extinct, but I know they're cries of extinct birds. And just the water of foghorns and things that are crisis that are going on. And, and it's not heavy-handed. It's not. It flows, it goes in waves, just like the waves. It gets builds, and then it gets a little softer, and then builds, and then it gets a little softer, and it builds, and then it builds, and it gets softer. So that's how that piece is. And so it's a three channel, so it needs a place, it needs a home to be, which is different. I could put it in festivals because I can show a lot in festivals, right? I think I can. I mean, I always seem to be. It seems to be building.
Well, I can see that connection because nature is always a part of the work that you've done. Friendship and
huge.
Women are a big part of what you do. So that feels like a natural extension to move from that. And the earth is always, you know, there's often, you know, soil and digging or hands in, you know, the earth or leaves, all those things are.
I hide telephones and leaves.
Yes.
I brush them off in order to say hello.
Right.
I don't want to end up like you.
Exactly.
As if they're talking to the earth.
Right.
I don't want to end up like you. This is pretty bad. You've been really messed up.
So I think it's really fascinating to see that connection. And so I hope people see that in your work. You can visit Cecilia's website. A number of those pieces are posted, and it is ceciliacondit.com. So we'll have that posted on KYMN Radio as well so that you can make that connection. You've done a lot of storytelling over the years, helped a lot of people, you know, build their stories and creating films. What is it that you've learned about story and storytelling that you'd like to pass on to anyone interested in sharing their stories?
You know, this year is the first time I've been able to answer that question. I didn't know, and I would always fumble and just say, I have no idea what advice to give.
Mm.
But now I actually have, somehow, like moving to Northfield, I have had a moment to ponder it. And I think that I never know what I'm doing. I always have a screenplay of some variety, and I have a paragraph that I've written that could say what it is that I'm, if I could, you know, just to help me out or to get a grant or just to, so I have a direction. But what has seems to me is when I start work is every door is open. It's just like every door, I can do anything, and I'm confident I can take on the world, anything that I do. It'll be good, but it won't be good until it's done. And I know that, and I know that I have every confidence because I do. But even when I was young, I knew that I might have had 10 possible doors, and I could open 7 of them. They'd all be in operation at the same time. And I get to the middle of the piece, and I don't know what I'm doing. because there's not as many doors, because I've opened ones, and once you've opened them and you have like five of them that actually work, you don't have 100 more options in front of you. And then I have friends. So I have a number of people, Kay Buston being one of them, who looks at the work and can tell me where I, what they see they like, what really works for them, what maybe I'm hitting not hard enough or too hard, or like no more blood. Nobody gets to be above the fray. Like in a parable of now, a friend of mine said, nobody gets to be. I had this woman floating in the top, and I thought of her as like sort of a goddess who never was not touched by the fact that the world was in flood mode and fire mode. She says, nope, nobody gets to be not hurt by this ecological disaster that we will, the country and the world will face. And so I had her much more like a struggle, the waves, she comes in and out and you see her and you don't. And so it became part of, if she hadn't said that, the piece would not have been as good.
I've never heard that interpretation of stories, and that's a fascinating, and it resonates that's a good way to, because it's hard for sometimes a storyteller to see in the middle what's happening, and so to have that input.
I'm lost.
Yeah.
I'm lost from the middle to the end, always lost.
And so connecting with other people and getting them to help.
Friends.
Right. Valued,
friends.
Trusted storytellers.
Oh, yeah, it's not just usually just anybody, but I in Northfield, I have found people that are terrific.
Yeah.
And so I have been very lucky to have a number of people who can look at my work. And also I have my tried and true.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's a very nice thing. And they also know me a little. And also the work speaks in some ways. But I wanted to talk a little bit about fans so I don't feel like I'm an egomaniac. Do we have a moment?
We have just maybe 30 seconds.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't.
Maybe we should save it for another show.
Okay.
Should we do that? And then you can come back, because I also want to talk about the artistry of crafting a film and editing and light and, you know, closeness and, all of those things, the technical things that we.
Yes, I used to be a one man. I'm a one band. I'm not. I now no longer do the photography. I mean, I do so much photography in it, but if I'm in it, I can't act.
No.
I can't act and,
and direct
shoot.
And shoot.
I cannot do that anymore. I used to be able to. I don't know how I did it, but I did it.
So we'll I'll have you back and we'll talk about
right.
that, those elements. It's been a joy.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Cecilia Condit is my guest today. Folks, I hope you always remember to find some time for Art Zany and find some time for that zany imagination. Until the meantime, until next time, enjoy your imagination.
Get ready to